My name is Melanie May, and I am at Wilm H. Turner Technical High School on March 22nd, 2002, to interview. Could you spell your name for me, please? Could
yeah,
you
of course. James M. Moss.
James M. Moss, right? Okay. I'm here to interview Mr. Moss about his personal history. Could you explain to me when and where you were born, please, sir?
I was born in the Bahamas, Nassau, Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
My mother sent me to a little island about 365 miles southeast, I think it is, of Nassau, to my grandmother. What an experience. And while there, I attended school, elementary school. I attended school in Crooked Island, the first white man I ever seen. I was about 9 years old. It was a shocking experience to me, you know. Here's this person. I have never seen any person like this person. And the contrast between this person and myself and the people in my community was quite amazing and different. He was standing in the sun, and I could look at him, and it looked as though blood was going to come out of him. That's what it looked like to me, you know, just said. But quickly I got adjusted to that because he was a person that goes around, a minister that goes around and speak. Well, he was someone that was more or less carrying the gospel. Missionary, that's the word. He was a missionary. And he spoke that night, and I really enjoyed what he said. However, that's my experience with the white man. And after leaving Crooked Island, I came back to Nassau with my mother. My mother had sent me up there, you know, and I came back with my mother. And it wasn't long, my father, who was here in Miami, sent for me. I came here to Miami. Now, I hope I'm not going too far because you got some questions you want to ask. And I would like to kind of stay within your boundary because I can go on and on with this kind of thing. Okay?
Okay, when you moved to Miami, what was your community like? Did you like it? Did you dislike it? What things went on every day?
Okay, when I first landed at 36th Street, at the airport at 36th Street, and saw the lights and what's not, in Crooked Island, mind you, not Nassau. While I was, let's go back to Crooked Island. In Crooked Island, when I was a boy in Crooked Island, there was no lights at all. No lights. The only lights you see at night is lamplighters. That was it, okay? But Crooked Island was a beautiful place, and I always wished, after I become a man and then my children, I wish they were able to experience that kind of experience that I have enjoyed while I was in Crooked Island, you know, going fishing and doing a whole lot of nature things. It was such a beautiful thing. And I just realized how beautiful it really was when I had come to this big city. That's how I... However, back to... in Miami now. When I got to the airport, I saw all the lights and I was more or less happy and felt pretty good. You know, I'm coming to the big lights and whatnot. And my father took me in the car and we were driving around, talking. And suddenly I noticed the light is diminishing. One lights, you know. And when I got down in Redland, my father said, "You see that light over there?" I said, "Yes, sir." There where you're going to be living. That almost like what I experienced in Crooked Island. I said, this is where I came from. Now I saw with all the lights and come here to live in a place like Crooked Island. However, it was quite different. And while living in Redland, I worked with the Dade County Park Department for a while.
How old were you?
17.
So, was there a problem with integration in your community at the time?
Oh yeah, there was a problem with integration. I encountered problem with segregation. I encountered my first problem with segregation in Homestead, Florida. There, I usually take a bus from Homestead to Miami because I wanted to, you know, I always wanted to come to Miami with the lights. I wanted, on the weekends, I wanted to come to Miami. And I discovered that when I go to the bus stop, right, I get, first of all, to get your ticket, you have to stand on the outside on the porch and wait until the lady who is serving the ticket sees you. Then she would come and ask you what you want. And then you would say, well, I'd like to have a ticket to go to Miami. And then she'd go get the ticket and bring it back to you, okay? Because, you know, we're not allowed to go in there and get your ticket. That's the first bad experience I encountered. Secondly, when I get to the bus, I noticed that you have everybody in line, of course. But I noticed that the bus driver would take the tickets from all the white people. And I got my tickets right in his eye. And he'd take the tickets from all the white folks. And when he get all the white folks into the bus, then he'll take mine. That was my second experience of segregation after coming from the Bahamas.
So that's the most important thing that you remember about segregation?
Oh, no, that's not the most important thing. You know, segregation was here day and night. You understand what I mean? It wasn't here today and kind of go down south tomorrow and you have a chance to do something else. Segregation was here day and night. So you experienced that day and night. The only time you didn't experience segregation, and which was a segregated thing, is when you were in your community with all your black people in your community. Then you know, there was no segregation there among you. But you always bear in mind you were segregated because you were in that group of people there, different from other groups, okay? And then I experienced segregation in my job working with Bell Telephone Company. I got a job with Bell Telephone Company. And Bell, as you know, at that time was called Southern Bell Telephone Company. It wasn't called Bell South those days. And this was a company that includes all of the southern states. All of the southern states within this company. And the mother company for all of these southern states and all the other states in the United States was AT&T. And it's just breaking up here. I think the Supreme Court had it all broken up here not so long ago. Yeah. There was no more this big time company. And I got a job with Bell. And in working with Bell, I would notice in the bulletin, the early bulletin, the different changes, the different position that needs someone, or the different area that might need someone. And so I thought maybe I would like to kind of improve myself by trying to get a promotion. So I would get the application and file the application, only to find my application, because my job, all you could do that I do in those days as a black person was to clean up, you know. I would find my application in the trash can the next morning. You understand? My application that I filed, I would find in the trash can, because this was the way of them trying to keep you back, hold you down. Okay, and you had no recourse. There was no recourse. You can't, you know, it's no use of talking to anyone about what has happened. No, because they was of the same kind. And so you were kind of more or less stuck. That doesn't say that in this, all of this America, there weren't some real, nice, concerned white people. There were a whole lot of concerned white people, nice white people in America, but in this South, in Southern America, there were some devils.
Do you remember going to Virginia Key Beach?
Yes, I remember Virginia Key Beach. You were not allowed to go into any, or go on any beaches in Dade County. No matter of fact, not in Florida. All the beaches were off limit to black people, all right? So in order to pacify black people, they decided they would open this thing called Virginia Beach. You had to take a boat and go over there. And this was a beach that set aside for black people. So I could remember that because I've been on that beach many times.
Did you ever attend any football games at the Dixie Stadium in Dorsey Park?
Oh, yes. I was a bad boy, too. I remember jumping in the water once. Yes, I attended the football game there, yes.
What was the best game that you ever visited?
Which was the best game?
Yes.
Man, I don't know if I can call it which one of the best games. I always was tight with the, my thing was Booker T. Washington. And on the Turkey Day, you know, that was my thing. And I always was more or less, Booker T was my team. So, you know, it's kind of hard for me to say which was the best game.
Was it really named the Dust Bowl? Was it really nicknamed the Dust Bowl?
Yes, that's what you used to call it, the Dust Bowl.
Did your family ever visit the Hampton House Hotel?
I have. Not the hotel itself. It was a nightclub downstairs in the hotel. Me being a saxophonist, I played saxophone. Me being a saxophonist, I had played there at the Hampton House. Yeah.
How old were you when Martin Luther King was assassinated?
I don't know. After you get married, start having children, you forget about keeping up with the age, okay? The important thing about anything that is to take care of a family, I mean, I'm talking about a man, I'm not talking about other people. I'm talking about a man. The most important thing to any man after he gets married is trying to take care of his family. And age and all of that will become secondary. And I can't tell you how old I was when Martin Luther King. I mean, I can take figures and stay on a piece of paper and figure it out about how old I was at that time. But I mean, right off my head, I couldn't tell you. But I could remember the day.
Did you ever get to meet him in person?
See him from a distance, yes. Shake his hand, no. You know, everybody wants to meet King. So it was a hard thing for anyone to go to meet him. It's not that he wouldn't like to meet you, but so many people wanted to meet him. If he just decided that he was going to just shake everybody's hand, maybe he wouldn't be able to raise his hand up the next morning. You know what I mean? Okay.
What do you remember about the early days of integration?
Early days of what?
Early days of integration.
Yes, I could remember the early days of integration. I could remember when it got started in the school with Father Theodore Gibson's son, I think was one of the first young person to go to an elementary school to start integration. That was something indeed, because everybody was kind of frightened about that also. And some of the early days about integration, I could remember me now at Bell Telephone Company, after the Supreme Court passed the law, Brown versus something. I forgot what it was. Brown versus?
Board of Education.
Right. After the Supreme Court passed that law, I decided that I would write a letter to the manager of Bell Telephone Company and stating that I think it was time for me to get into the mainstream of the company, because I was still 18 years now, I've been there then, still doing janitorial work. No black people was in any kind of position with Bell Telephone Company at that time. No operators, no engineers, not even truck drivers, okay? So I wrote a letter to the manager and telling the manager that I thought it's about time I get in the mainstream of Bell Telephone Company. So he wrote me a letter and asked me to come take a test, and this is why I like to emphasize this. I like to make sure that you young people understand this. This is why it is always good to be prepared. Don't waste your time with foolishness. Prepare yourself. So if anything should come down the hopper, so to speak, you will be ready to grasp it, okay? Prepare yourself. He wrote me a letter and told me to come take the test. I took the test. I passed the test, okay? So now after I passed the test, sent me to a central office, the Bell Central Office, the offices that you connect all the telephones for everybody within that area. Like if you're in the 6-3 area, each one of these number 6-3 area, the 8-9 area, the 7-5 area, they have a different central office. And what they mean by that, those are the places where all the telephones connected and all connected up, okay? So I was sent to the 6-3 area. My cousin and I, the two face black. And when we got down there that morning, all the white people were outside. I guess to see who these two blacks are coming here to work. And I told my cousin, I said, well, we have quite an audience this morning. So we went in there, went in the building, no, there was no disturbance, no one tried to hurt us or anything. Well, I guess just wanted to, it was a strange thing, it was a new thing, there was no black people working in that office. So we went to work in that office. After 18 years working for Bell Telephone Company, we were sent there. My payroll went up $40 a week more than it was for the 18 years I was there, okay? Plus, this was called an entrance job. So you see how far back they were holding me? This was called an entrance job after 18 years and with the little $1, $2 they promoted me. This was called an entrance job and I was making $40 more than 18 years worth of work a week.
What are your thoughts on the changes that were made in the 1950s and 60s?
Is my thought on what?
On the 1950s and 60s, the changes that were made.
You mean? I think we have made tremendous changes. We have done very well. Some of our people have really held the line pretty good. But, you know, there's always room for more. And we got to do more. And what is so sad to me today is that I see so many of our young men particularly wasting their time and finding themselves in prison. This bothers me. I think it would really bother Martin Luther King if he was alive. Because King never even dreamed that this kind of thing would happen. You know, and he knows that some people would go astray, yes. But it seemed that this is a massive thing with young black men. Every time you look in the newspaper, somebody shot somebody, somebody did this, 16 and 17 years old. You know, and I think maybe, I don't know what I can do, but whatever I can do, I'm going to try to do to help young people. I am the president of the Bahamian American Federation, a nonprofit organization. And we are trying to do some things with scholarships and whatnot, trying to help young people to improve themselves. And I would like for you young people, especially you young girls, let me tell you the power of womanhood. Women can change men. Really. Women can change men because for some reason we men have a soft heart for women, and when women talk, we kind of bend around and we may raise a little sand sometimes, but we kind of still move into the direction that they would like to see us. And I would say to you young girls, maybe you all need to talk to some of these young boys and talk to them about character, about future, and things like that. See what you can do. And young men, those of you who have some point in life and who are thinking about doing something, talk to your friends about, let's try to improve the lot of ourselves instead of finding ourselves in prisons and all of that kind of stuff. It's better going to army. My Lord, if you keep shooting that bad, go to the army. Go in the Navy or something. Do something with yourself. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I would like to thank you for coming out to me, interview, and spending time.
Okay.